front-end developer for the first time in my career.
User experience design.
I'm a back-end developer. I mainly work with Drupal.
Welcome to another episode of Behind the Screens, where we go beyond the code and into the community. I'm your host, Chris Albrecht. Let's dive in. Behind the Screens is made possible by Lullabot. Lullabot is a strategy, design, and development company where we turn great content into captivating user experiences. Find us on Twitter at Lullabot or in your browser at lullabot.com. We'd love to meet you. Today I'm going behind the screens with Lullabot's senior developer, Angus Mack. Hello, Angus.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. So you joined Lullabot how many years ago?
I think over 5 years now. I think it was 2012. In March.
And you started off doing mostly Drupal work, right?
Yeah, it was Drupal 7 at that time. I was basically mostly doing Drupal for a little while until like I started branching off to do other stuff.
So what is it that you're doing now? Because you barely touch Drupal at all anymore, right?
Yeah, I'm actually working on iOS and tvOS and mostly concentrating on tvOS and using Swift and Xcode and all that good stuff.
So Swift is the language, that was a Facebook language, right?
Apple.
Apple, okay, Swift was an Apple language.
So technically Swift is open source, but a lot of the Apple SDK is written in Swift, or Objective-C is not open source.
Ah, okay. So how has it been transitioning from working with Drupal to something like that?
it's interesting. I haven't been doing Drupal for quite a while now. So I spent some time working on Roku for a little while. I spent some time working on React and JavaScript and all that stuff. And now I'm working on Swift. I've always like playing with different technologies and just like, you know, moving and kind of challenging myself. You know, I believe, like I say, once I understand PHP, I want to try something different and see how people are doing it in the Swift world. And then kind of be able to contrast the different languages and how they're different or the same, or you know, what can we do better in JavaScript from, you know, learning some of the good stuff from Swift, for example.
Mm-hmm. So Swift is used in tvOS. Is that also used in Roku, or do they use a different language?
No, Roku is in BrightScript, which is a language that I think was the founder of Roku created. It's people compare it to Visual Basics, but it's pretty low level, and there's a lot of issues with it. Swift is a little bit more sophisticated, and it's technically is built on Objective-C. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of stuff that you can bridge from Objective-C to Swift, but it's mostly written new for iOS and tvOS.
Interesting. So you're putting together apps for these services for particular Lullabot clients.
Yes. So I work for a big media company, and so if you have an Apple TV at home, you could be using the app that I spend a lot of time and tears and blood and sweat in. It's an app that we have an iOS app and tvOS app. And I worked on the iOS app first, and you know, just an app that you can go and watch some of your favorite TV shows for NBC. And so if you're using, if you go on your phone and you get the NBC app, and you can see some of my work there. And we end up splitting out to the tvOS team. And we use a lot of the code because it's technically the same code base. I mean, iOS and tvOS share a lot of the common elements, but the front end obviously is different. One is on the phone, and you have your finger can touch it, and there's like
right.
the tap action and all that. But on the tvOS, you have sort of like a trackpad remote thing, so it's a little bit different. But we share a lot of the code, and so yeah, if you have an Apple TV and you go and download the NBC app, you might be able to see some of the work that I've been doing.
What was the most difficult part, or like a big gotcha on those? It was really, it took a while to figure out, but once you got it, it was sort of like that aha, this feels really good moment. or was there one, or was the whole thing in and of itself one of those?
The language itself is not too bad. There are a few things that is a little bit of like just apple sugar that they put in. Mm-hmm. So it makes it a little bit confusing and complicated. So for example, every single variable can be an optional variable or a non-optional variable. So it's kind of like a nullable concept. So in JavaScript, you don't have that. You know, you have to check if a variable is null. But in Swift, if your variable is not optional, there's no chance for it to be nil. They call it nil in Swift. And there are a few other stuff, like, you know, just little things that you use. Like we use enum a lot for different things, which we don't have in PHP, but I think they have it in C or like maybe even Java. I don't know. I can't remember. But yeah, there are a few differences, but the most difficult thing is probably just the setup. It's really darn difficult to set up Xcode and have it compile and have everybody using the same certificate so that you can build your app to actually a physical device. So I guess it's fine if you want to play around with it. And I encourage everyone to like go download Xcode and use a simulator and play around and see what you can get out of just, you know, putting in a few lines of code. But once you are past that point and you want to actually build it to a test device, that becomes a little bit more complicated, and you have to get a developer account, you have to pay for it, and you have to set up your certificate and all that stuff. It becomes even harder when you have a team of people that, you know, your developers, you know, sometimes you might have to take away permission from somebody, and then you're going to have to generate a new cert for everybody and send that out to your whole team kind of thing.
That sounds really tricky. You know, so everyone's working on their local local host then with Xcode emulator to see how it's all working.
Yeah. So so each of us still have a device as like, you know, that's what your client is going to see. So the simulator sometimes doesn't catch some of the problems. Like there's memory problems that you might not get when you are running on your MacBook Pro. There is like a few things like the way that you interact with an Apple TV simulator is not the same as using a remote and actually sort of using your finger and rubbing on the trackpad and clicking it. It's just a little bit different the way that you would kind of navigate. So it's that kind of stuff. It's really hard to really have the good sense of what actually happens when you're using a simulator. So a lot of times we'll test, especially some of that user interaction things, we'll test it on the actual device just to see how it performs.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. So if somebody wanted to get into creating an app, either for Roku or for iOS or OS TV, TVOS, what's a piece of advice you would give to somebody who is really interested in maybe learning Swift or learning the languages and creating something like that? What's a good starting mm-hmm. place for them?
I would say just go ahead and download Xcode. There's a lot of beginning apps just from downloading Xcode. There's the Playground that you can use. On the iPad, I think, I don't know if they have it on the iPhone, but on the iPad, there's something called, I want to say Swift Playground. It's basically a sort of like a video game where you have this animal creature thing that you're supposed to bring it to, like, you know, from the beginning to the destination. So so you would have to write code. So they would teach you, okay, I need to go forward three times. How can I write a loop in Swift to like kind of bring this this creature over to the destination? So there are like little levels like that. So so you get to play around with a lot of that stuff. And that's a really good resource. And they actually built it for, I think, mostly for kids to like just learn and just kind of get them interested in programming. But I would also just go online. There's like a lot of resources. You pay $10. Udemy has a lot of good courses. That's actually how I started. I knew I was going to transition over to start working on iOS and tvOS. So what I did was I spent the weekend. I spent about 30, 40 hours and just finishing a course and just to see like, you know, how the basic stuff work. Because a lot of the stuff is, you can sort of figure it out, but, you know, just following somebody and doing the same thing, there's nothing that beats just trying, like, hands-on, getting your hands dirty.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't realize there were so many fun like game sort of resources like that. That's really cool. Do you miss Drupal at all, or do you want to stick in this area of programming, or is there some other place that you'd like to get to? It's a pet project.
I always like to be a little bit different from everyone else. So it's kind of cool that I'm like, oh, I'm this Swift guy, and I can make jokes like, here, this is what I would do, but don't listen to me. I'm just a Swift guy. but yeah, I don't know. I mean, I do really like Drupal, and I feel like I've not been keeping up with Drupal 8. My focus was on Drupal 7 a lot of times, and I have transitioned off the Drupal project, you know, since you know, before 8 was out.
Mm-hmm.
So I've you know, spent some time on it, but I feel like I want to get back into it a little bit. But at the same time, I'm not completely detached from Drupal. Like a lot of the information that we get, it's, you know, even though it's like a few layers down, the information, the data is still coming from Drupal to begin with.
Ah.
The editors go into Drupal, they go through a Node API that goes into, you know, a middle tier before it gets to me in iOS or tvOS. But, you know, a lot of that stuff is still kind of relevant. So I can still tell when I get a piece of data, oh, this is an entity, I know exactly why it was scheduled. Like, you know, it was the data is structured that way. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that kind of makes me feel a little bit like home, and it also kind of makes sense when I see it. So it helps, definitely helps a little bit. But I do want to try to get back into Drupal 8 and maybe, like, you know, have, you know, convert my website over, kind of thing.
So if you woke up tomorrow and all that was gone, the internet had disappeared, what would you do with your time?
Oh, man, I can't wait for that to happen. I would love to be... So first, I would have to fight off everybody and get a piece of property just by the water. And I would just start farming that land and fishing that land. And I would just... That's my dream, even if the internet is still around. The problem right now is I work, you know, got to make money. And
right. Well, so you could make money doing that.
Yeah. So I would love to be able to just, you know, even, you know, in 20 years, if I'm able to, like, just live by the water and, you know, grow my own food and catch my own fish for dinner, that would be great.
Yeah, you talk about fishing on our calls a lot. Is there any particular place you like to go, or do you prefer ice fishing over regular fishing, or is it just any time you get a chance to throw a line out?
Yeah, they're sort of mutually exclusive, so I'll take any chance I can. So, I mean, I like them equally,
mm-hmm.
But they're also different. So, but it's definitely great to be outside either way, you know, whether it's warm or cold, just be outside in nature.
Yeah.
Just catch a fish, put the fish back. It sounds kind of weird when you put it that way.
What's the largest fish you've ever caught? And you can exaggerate because no one can see your hands, so no one will have any idea if you're telling the truth or not.
This big!
That's a monstrous fish.
Probably a few pounds. I mean, I catch a lot of bass, and I live in Ottawa. In Ontario, so we don't get the, you know, the fish that you get in the south. So, you know, a bass is like, you know, 4 or 5 pounds. That's pretty good.
Nice. So to wrap it all up, is there anybody that you would like to share some thanks or gratitude with, who maybe gave you a little push along the way, or a presentation that you saw that was really inspiring?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are a few people. And the most of them are Lolabots. First was, I was given a chance. You know, I feel like when I applied, you know, to be a part of Lolabot, I wasn't ready for it. Like, I don't feel like I was, my skills were, you know, good enough to be a part of Lolabot. You know, I'm sure a lot of us feel that when they first started, but, you know, Lolabot took a chance on me, and along the way, James and Andrew and they helped me out a lot, just, you know, just my personal growth and just, you know, technical skills in general. And I would like to thank Mattel for basically giving me a little push. I was sort of given a choice of whether I want to go and explore the iOS and tvOS world, and I was actually about to turn it down, and he actually said, well, it's you. I mean, you have done the other stuff. You have done Roku. You have switched from PHP to JavaScript. You know, why are you worried about it now? And that actually opened a big door that, you know, it's just like to see a whole world that I've never seen before. So thank you for the people mentioned, and a lot of Lullabots here that have, you know, given me the chance and like encouragement.
Cool. Angus, thanks a lot for taking a few minutes, man. This was great.
Thank you.
Whether you're learning how to build sites with Drupal or diving into the code, there are community-powered camps, summits, sprints, and trainings happening all over the world. Find all of these and more at drupalcal.com. And of course, if you want to boost your Drupal chops from the comfort of your own home, point your browser to drupalize.me and stuff your brain full of carefully crafted videos and tutorials.